Pastor Steve is singing along.
Oh, I love that song.
It's a great song.
Man.
It never made the charts, even though Quicksilver Messenger Service had several.
Of course not.
Yeah,
of course
right.
Not.
Yeah, because it's too religious. It's too scriptural, right? Yeah. They had, one of their big hits was Mona, Have Another Hit of Fresh Air. There were a bunch of others. You know, they were big time, you know, with the San Francisco psychedelic scene. This this song was kind of out of the ordinary for them, though. You know, they didn't do many songs that could be considered spiritual, but this one was outstanding. Yeah.
Well, I've got a nice, great, big Bubba cup of hot coffee.
All right. Okay. All right. So tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be the Hungarians. What is their origin? A hotly debated subject among historians, geneticists, you name it.
But they sure are giving them hell over there in Europe.
That's right. That's right. Actually,
Hungary is just, they're kicking everybody out. They're shutting down the banks.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
We're watching more and more and more of this as the final chapter and all this is starting to play out.
Right.
I know there's a lot of naysayers. Oh, no, it's too soon. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes like a freight train. It's just unstoppable. It's huge.
Right.
He says, I'm coming like a thief in the night I will appear with all these angels with flaming swords, flaming sword of truth, and just the word itself will shut these people down. When he's here, his presence, because we're talking Yahweh in the flesh. We're not talking some political hack that's got guns behind him.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking divine presence.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
In the Barnes Review, the title of the article, and this is the most recent issue. Let me look at the cover. January, February 2019. The article is entitled "The Mysterious Origins of the Hungarians," and they go through the history.
Brother Abear's got, are they related to the Thirstarians?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The Hungarians. Thirstarians.
Oh, well, they had to be thirsty and hungry, right?
Oh.
Tricky. Yeah.
Brother Abear, that you got a demerit for that one. That was bad.
Right.
Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Bad.
Right. So, obviously, the Hungarians, well, they've gotten a bad rap from white nationalists because they were basically on the Eastern Front of Europe and had to, like Russia and to some extent Poland, had to withstand the invasions of the Mongols, the Tatars, and other marauding tribes. Not all of these tribes are Mongolian in origin. Some of them are actually, well, for example, Uyghurs. We've done shows about the Uyghurs showing that they're, in fact, white. And they migrated as far as Mongolia, okay? And even today, they have tribes that, although they're no longer pure white, although there's some, there appear to be some pure white descendants of the Uyghurs still there. But they have begun mixing with the Asians. But their mummies show that their origin was pure white. Okay, they were white.
Well, so, it's like the original Egyptians.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Mm-hmm.
They were pure white.
Yes, yes.
Ones that built all the magnificent architecture, et cetera, et cetera. And the ones that persecuted Israel were the Hyksos, which were a branch of the Edomites, the Hittites,
yes,
actually.
Right. Yes. Yeah,
and a new king arose over Mitzrayim. They had conquered Mitzrayim, and they were the ones that were doing all the bad stuff. So that's why Yahweh lowered the boom on them.
Right, right.
Oh, well, boom, chicka, boom, yeah. Chicka, boom.
Yeah. Now, and this is by John Tiffany. I think he's one of the editors of, if not the chief editor of the Barnes Review. The there's a drawing here. Subtitle, The Magyars First Appear in History in 3,2500 BC. Well, that would put them right in the area just before Abraham, okay, probably in the time of Job, and right after Noah's flood, because Noah's flood was 3454 BC or thereabouts, okay? So the chances are they are Japhethites. Because,
no, it couldn't have been 54 before Christ. 54 years. No, it was...
No, no, no.
3454. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it came off. It came off as 54.
Okay, yeah. No, 3,450.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's about the time of Noah's flood, which was not global. It was
the Tamarind Basin. We've done shows on
that. Yeah, we've covered that substantially. So this would verify what we've been teaching about Ham, Shem, and Japheth, namely that the Japhethites went north and pretty much stayed north, although they migrated west as well.
Oh, no. David James said, so are the Wiggers white or maybe not? Oh, David, shame on you.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, as long as they're white.
Right? Oh, man, that's funny. That is funny.
What's that song?
Boy, everybody's all tuned up tonight.
Oh,
I
yeah,
can
yeah.
see that.
Having fun even before the show starts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Time for a white wigger.
By the way, David, your shows are absolutely brilliant lately. And I've got them downloaded.
Yeah,
I've saved
coming.
A bunch of them, and I listen to them Ooh. And share them. You really come up with some outstanding stuff. So thank you.
Okay, so I'll be moseying on over to the chat room shortly. But so far, this is pretty much in tune with what we understand of the dispersion of Noah's three sons. Okay?
Yeah.
And the Japhethites, then some of the Slavic people descended from, in fact, all the Slavic people descended from Japheth. And so did the early Greeks. So yeah. The Slavs, Greeks, you know, what we would call Bulgarians,
well,
they were white.
Yawan is the name in Hebrew for Greece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Yawani.
And Yawan was a descendant of Japheth. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how many generations down, but yeah, he was a descendant of Japheth. So all the Slavic people, and there's, of course, that prophecy that Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem. Which was fulfilled when the Shemites, the Israelites, took over Europe, and many of the Slavic people lived under Shemitic kings and queens, like the Tsars, the Kaisers, the kings of Austria and Hungary, etc., etc. Okay, so that prophecy was fulfilled when our people began their dynasties ruled over Europe, and that includes the Romans. Okay.
Yeah, they were our people. I was the Zera branch of Yehuda.
So that prophecy has definitely been fulfilled that Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem, namely in the nations of Shem, ruled over by the Shemites. Okay. So my opinion has always been, because I know from firsthand experience that the Hungarians, for the most part, not maybe as much as the Germans or the Swedes or the Danes, are blonde-haired, blue-eyed people.
Sure okay? are.
There must have been some assimilation because they've been invaded from the east so many times, right? But even so, my knowledge is that the Hungarians do not enjoy race mixing. Their modern expression, you know, going against Muslim immigration, unlike the Western nations in Europe, they're opposed to it. Okay, so they're a white nation, and but you can't blame a nation that's far east, because they've been invaded by Mongols, that they are assimilationists. They never were assimilationists. They fought bitterly against the Mongols, and they won. And they won, just like the Austrians beat them. Okay, so he puts this article in the right after Noah's flood, which makes a lot of sense. 3,000 to 2,500 BC by the Kama River, southwest of the Ural Mountains, moving slightly west of that area by 2,000, with evidence of horseback riding from that era. Above, Magyar warriors were the terror of early Christian Europe. Yeah, because a lot of our people were, in fact, pagans. The few remaining Magyar tribes east of the Urals moved into West Magna Hungaria about 400 to 300 BC, but hard times lay ahead. In the Battle of Lechfeld against the Germans, now listen to this. This is incredible. Out of 8 to 10,000 Magyars, only 7 survived. Wow, that's called wiping them out. That is a true wipeout. That's probably the bloodiest, the biggest loss in human history. 8 to 10,000, only 7 survived. So you can see the Germans won that one. All right, all right,
Yeah.
yeah. Okay,
What are you reading from?
this is the Barnes Review.
Well, I have myths,
Oh yeah, no,
hypotheses,
I'm just yeah.
facts.
We'll get into that. I'm just setting it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So is
Yeah, I was looking for where
right. Yeah.
you're reading.
Yeah. I'll put that link in the
Okay,
chat
don't
room.
worry about it. Don't worry
Yeah.
about it. I've got this other one up. We're fine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Just a couple more items here from this article, which is really good. The Hungarians do not think of themselves as Asiatics, nor do they physically appear un-European. In fact, their Asiatic Magyar forebears mixed fairly quickly and well with small scattered groups of people around them, mostly Slavs, but also a few remnants of some earlier visitors from Asia, mainly Avars. I'm not sure who the Avars are. They may not be Eastern. Okay, and so he has a photograph of the Mansi and Khanty peoples of the Trans-Ural region. They are obviously white. They just like you could switch their costumes with Danes and Germans and other Europeans, and they look just like them. And we talked about the Finnic-Ugarian connection, where I think it was the Frisians, the episode we did, two or three episodes we did on the Frisians. And then he starts talking about the linguistic evidence. Okay. And he says, no serious linguist can doubt today that Hungarian is a Finno-Ugrian language, but uncertainty remains as to the amount, character, and origins of the Turkish elements of Hungarian. Now, it has to be understood, I think the Japhethites, and I'm arguing that the Hungarians are in fact Japhethites, that they straddled the Black Sea and the Sea of Aral, and they were primarily east of the Sea of Aral. But our people went in that direction. The Israelites went in that direction. They're known as the Scythians.
Right.
So the Scythians obviously inhabited the same territory, and it's quite possible that these Japhethites and Israelites, the Scythian slash Japhethite mix, that's probably what the Scythians really are. They're a mix of Japheth and Israel. Okay? I'm not sure, I've never read any accounts where the Scythians had any strife with the Japhethites. It appears that they mixed together fairly, peaceably. Okay? So, and then Turkish, what's Turkish? Well, Turkish is probably a language that comes from the same area, okay? So he discounts the idea that they originated in Siberia, that they're actually a proto-Finnish. He says on page 31, the development of the Hungarian language started around 800 BC. 800 BC. What does that remind you of? Just before the Assyrian captivity of Israel?
Well,
Okay.
what we'd have to do would do an in-depth study of their word structures.
Right.
And I bet you're going to find Hebrew and Aramaic.
There you go. There you go. Well, okay, let's a couple more items here. The Hungarian language started around 800 BC with the withdrawal of the grasslands and the parallel southward migration of the nomadic Ugric groups. So we already talked about the Uyghurs, and I think the Uyghurs is what they're referring to as the Ugric. And we know that they were Japhetic white people from the mummies and from their culture. So he says the revisionist theory. If everything we thought we knew about the origins of Estonian, Finnish, Hungarian, remember we talked about the Estonians and Finns,
right,
as being the Frisians and others, and Issachar, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's lumping the Hungarians in with them. A new theory of Hungarian origins has emerged, which surprisingly maintains the Proto-Hungarians lived next to or among the Sanskrit-speaking Indo-Europeans of what today we would call Pakistan and or India. Okay.
Well, the little brown people crept in because that whole civilization was white at one time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Indo-Aryans were actually the descendants of Abraham through Keturah.
Right.
Okay. Actually, I got a question for you, because we pronounce it Abraham and Isaac, but my indication is that it's Ishak and Abram.
Abram mm-hmm. is the first name. Then Abraham
mm-hmm.
means father of my people.
Or father of many nations.
Well,
right?
Father of my people.
Okay, right.
Right.
Oh,
father
of
my people, because Israelites are Yahweh's people.
Right, right. Okay, a genetic marker discovered in 2000 proved Hungarians were not part of a theorized migration of Uralic peoples. Indeed, they have had little, if any, contact with other Uralic peoples for 4,000 years. And he says, well, their genetic marker is RB1, I mean R1A, which is white. Okay, as I said earlier. So the mere fact that the Hungarians were on the Eastern Front, so to speak, and have had to endure the invasions of many other peoples, I don't know to what extent the Hungarians were invaded by the Khazars, but
Poles. Imagine they had skirmishes for a long time.
Oh yeah, there had to be skirmishes.
They weren't so organized in those days. They had roving bands of marauders.
Right, right.
And they weren't massive armies, but they'd come and they'd raid and they'd steal women and rape the sheep.
And that still happens today in those areas.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Khazars.
Right.
They were strange.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just
okay. Yeah, this is very interesting evidence. Examining DNA evidence, Sandor is led to conclude the Magyars were farmers, so they couldn't be Khazars, who lived in the Hindu Kush region. Okay, folks? They're Indo-Aryans. While all other Uralic-speaking groups display a marker mutation called M178, at least 4,000 years old, M178 has not been detected in Hungary. This means the Hungarian ancestors were never in Northern Asia or Northern Europe.
Nope.
That's because they came from the south, from Indo, from India.
Right.
A haplogroup is a group of genes in a species, such as humans, that tend to be inherited together from the mother or the father. These genes are found on the Y chromosome from the father or in the mitochondrial DNA from the mother. The majority of Hungarians, about 50%, belong to the R1A haplogroup, most of which is R1A1, originating in South Asia, southern Pakistan, or northern India. Well, that's where you find the Indo-Aryans, is it not, folks?
Well, okay. That was because of the migration of our people, and that's where we get the priest class called the Brahmins from Abram.
Yes.
And originally they were white. Now they are not.
But now they're not anymore, no.
Well, same way the Egyptians, the original Egyptians were white, and now look at them.
Well, this explains why the Aryan-looking Indians, who come from the north, from northern India, they have Aryan-looking skeletal structure, you know, faces and heads, but they have very dark skin. But this is where the Indian physicists come from, which means they're very intelligent because they got a lot of white DNA, all right? It's pretty obvious, okay? Amazingly, all Uralic languages, including Hungarian, are derived from Sanskrit, an ancient Indo-European language. Now, we know that German and all the European languages are derived from Hebrew. So is Sanskrit.
A lot of direct Hebrew words.
Right, and we've done many shows.
Welsh is...
Right. Hebrew?
If you speak Welsh, you speak Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
It's virtually identical.
Yes, yes. So we see here that because a lot of this is speculation, because there's not much history on the Hungarians. Not much at all. Okay. But speculation by most, in fact, this is the theory of secular academia, is that all of these European tribes that are known today as Europeans somehow came from the north and settled, you know, in Germany, and, you know, that they all came from the north, that the northern peoples of Europe preceded the southern, and then they moved into India from the north. So what he's saying here, no, exactly the opposite occurred. And that's what we know from the migrations of our ancestors. They all came from Armenia. Most of them through the Caucasus Mountains, but others from, eastern parts and moved north. And that's what we're finding out about the Hungarians. That's where they came from.
They're part of the dispersion.
That's right. They're part of the dispersion. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the truth about the Hungarians coming to light. So I've been doing a lot of research about Sanskrit and Hebrew, and this is my theory, Pastor Steve, I'll run it by you, that languages morph by the migrations of the people who speak those languages.
Exactly.
Okay.
Correct.
These languages do not develop changes by themselves. It's because they confront other cultures and move into new territories and have to make up names for the new, the new hills. Sometimes they place their old names upon those hills and valleys and rivers. Okay, so it's not the fact that the modern linguists say, "Well, these languages just evolve by themselves." You can ignore their migrations. No, you can't. You can't ignore their migrations.
Look at the highly differentiated local colloquialisms in the United States.
Right.
Because of the mass of land that we have here, we have all these different areas that have developed basically almost a new language. There are areas of the South that if you send one of those boys up into Boston, they can't understand them. And vice versa. The Bostonese cannot understand a lot of the guys from the South.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we have a lot of strange sayings down
right?
here.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, you like that? Yeah, that's far, man.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
Far.
Right? Yeah. Are you talking about the booze you're drinking?
Yeah, that's
or
far
the distance,
water. Hey,
or the distance
yeah,
you have to travel.
That's shine. That's shine. They up, make, up, up,
right.
up, and up in the hill. making shine.
Mm-hmm. But
down in the holler.
Yeah,
because if you drink enough, of that, you're going to holler.
Yeah. Well, people think of Illinois as a northern state, but if you go down south of Highway US 40, which cuts right through the state, about midway, you're starting to get the southern drawl. All right, and the farmers have a southern drawl.
Well, you know, that's that migration from the south.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right. So,
and if you get the migration from the far south, it's si, senor.
Yeah, right. Right. Well,
I want you to meet my sister.
Right? My keister? Did you say keister? Oh, sister.
Yes, yeah,
right? Okay. All right. So, but continuing with this saga of who are the Hungarians, we've got this article, Myths, Hypotheses, and Facts Concerning the Origin of Peoples, the Ancient Identity of the Hungarians, the Hungarian-Hebrew Connection. Whoa! Who'd have thunk it?
See, we're not alone out there, folks.
Yeah,
everybody's
right.
Got this doom and gloom, and oh, what are we going to do? And there's only a few of us. No, there's not.
Yeah. Right.
There's a whole herd of us out here.
Right. So, obviously, we found with the articles on the Danites and the Frisians, and we specifically looked for articles written by Swedes and Danites and Nordics. And they generally back up, and in fact, I'd say 90% of what they say backs up Christian identity. They just err by calling the Jews Judah, right, and things like that. But
well, in those articles, it's the historical facts that count.
That's right.
Not their view on the Talmudists.
Right.
Okay.
So this is very important.
It gives historical facts on migrations of our people.
Right. Right.
Whether they have their theology and their word structure correct,
mm-hmm.
that's neither here nor there. It's the historical facts in those articles that is important.
Right. Yes, yes.
And that's what we try to present here, whether the article is 100% correct and goes along with quote-unquote approved CI theology.
Right,
well,
right.
But
one thing is
not an issue.
Right. Well, we're talking about the historicity of the Hungarian people, and mm-hmm. So different people are going to have different insights. But I can say generally that the secular historians have completely missed and totally ignored the migrations of the 12 tribes. Totally ignored that subject. Okay, so we're looking for authors who are primarily secular, but who disagree with that secular, that account and that ignorance or ignoration of the migrations of the 12 tribes. And subtitled finally here, an essay realized with the valuable contribution of the Hungarian scholar Hargita Csaba. Preliminary remarks.
Csaba,
okay.
C is silent.
Okay. Oh, Csaba, okay. Owing to the lack of conclusive evidences available until now, this research proposes likely hypotheses, not definitive solutions. The historic facts exposed here and the reasonable credit that may be bestowed on ancient myths allow the author to frame feasible hypotheses open to further discussion. So I'll just turn it over to you at this point, and let's get into this article.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You got it up?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
How would I know it's Csaba as I was reading it? You know I've got a... you want me to start?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll
You're having
that.
Too much fun.
I didn't want to step on you.
No. I asked you to start reading.
We take turns.
Yeah, go ahead.
We take turns.
Yeah.
Is there any link that relates with each other peoples that apparently are quite different?
Apparently,
right. Is there any relationship between Sumerians, Hurrians, Mitanni, Habiru, Hyksos, Kassites, Chaldeans, Mede, Khwarezmians, Scythians, Massagetas.
Oh, we know what tribe
Avans,
that is. Oh, yeah.
Sabirs, Avars, Huns, Magyars, Onogurs, Khazars, Uyghurs, and a present-day European nation.
Oh, you just described the whole of Eastern Europe.
Well, it gives a list of all the tribe types there.
Mm-hmm.
Can these people, having different origins, namely Cushitic, Shemitic, and Japhethic, converge into the ethnogenesis of a single modern nation? The answer to these questions is yes.
Okay, this needs to be discussed. A lot of these tribes that he has mentioned are indeed white Japhethites and are indeed white Israelites. And even the Khazars, before they merged with the Mongols and the Turks, were descendants of Japheth.
At one time,
at
yes.
one time. And at one the time, Edomites they were white.
And the Edomites moved in and polluted the entire bloodline.
There you go. There you go. So go ahead and read. I'll see if I have a question. I'm trying to find out who the Mitanni are. Okay, while you're reading.
All right. Indeed, most of the peoples mentioned above had vanished. They'd been absorbed into the regular, leaving hardly any trace of themselves. Yet it is unlikely that entire nations that have even ruled over vast empires disappear. After their defeat or collapse, they have to be sought for somewhere else, known under different names. All right. The seed line of Cain, the one that murdered Abel, were called the Caini, not the Kenizzites. The Caini. Everybody get those two confused. They mingled so much that the Caini disappeared as a distinct people and spread their satanic bloodline all through these other things, thus the problems that we have today. Okay, that's what happened to the Caini. Now, everybody's trying to say, oh, there's the Kenizzites. No, that's not from Cain. That's a different tribe. And they get those confused because it sounds a little similar. They need to do their studies. Continuing on, a further query. May two different, unrelated modern nations be mysteriously linked by a thread running through history of mankind since the dim and distant past, namely, since the very beginnings of recorded history.
Yeah, we're talking post-flood, right after the flood. Yeah.
May they still be organized states as they were then after having undergone migrations, wars, exiles, and even temporarily disappeared from the historic scene? Also, to these questions, the answer is yes. All right, let's pause right here.
Okay.
Our people who have their identity when these invaders come in become very insular, very standoffish. Okay, they'll obey the local rulers and their local laws because they're outmanned and outgunned. But they tend not to marry outside their own group. They remain Israelites. They don't want to mix. Now, you're going to have racial traitors.
Right.
We've had them throughout time. That's where these mixed bloods have come from.
Right.
People in our own racial group that have succumbed to the propaganda and have mixed.
Yes, yes.
We see that today with these coal burners that usually wind up dead. There was another one that's dead in the news. They're brainless. They have no morality, therefore they will mix, because mixing, according to Yahweh's laws, is immoral and punishable by the loss of the spirit that was imbued in the Adamic race only by Yahweh. Their
yes.
progeny, their children, are dead spiritually from the womb. A mamzer shall not enter into the congregation of Yahweh, even under the generation of the tenth, shall not come into the congregation of Yahweh. And a mamzer is a mixed blood or a mongrel. That's Yahweh's law.
Right.
Now, they don't like the law. They want to have their political correctness. This has been a problem with our people. Due to lack of scriptural education, they've taken the Bible out of the schools. Our little Edomite buddies have done that for us.
Right.
You can't have religious education in a public school. So they don't know Yahweh's rules. And the family structure has been so occupied with just sheer survival that the parents don't have enough knowledge to sit their children down and teach them the scripture, because the parents are also ignorant of the scripture. So this is the big indicator of one of the main problems that we have now, is ignorance of the word. So that's what we're about here, is trying to educate people as to what the word says.
Right.
And not go off on some wild tangent.
I just posted a link here to the Forgotten Empire, the Ancient Kingdom of Mitanni. Mitanni was a state that existed between the 16th and 13th centuries B.C. This state occupied the land of the Hurrians. And the Hurrians are mentioned in the Bible. This area is located in the upper Tigris-Euphrates basin, in other words, the Fertile Crescent, and corresponds today with northern Iraq, Syria, and southeastern Turkey. And this this kingdom was destroyed by the Assyrians. Okay. So more than likely, they are a blend again of Japheth and Shem, probably what they are. Okay.
Yep.
So you can read the rest of this. I posted it in the chat room, so please continue, Pastor Steve.
All right, continuing on. This is the case of Hungarians, a non-European people of Europe, and their enigmatic connection with the Hebrew people.
I love it. Enigmatic.
Yes. In fact, Hungary has not only been one of the most important centers of development of They have Jewish.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jewish.
Well, Jews
and,
did move in there. Oh,
all right,
sorry.
Jewish and Romani culture. Now, who are the Romanies? Those are the gypsies. Understand? They're mixed blood. They're mixed with everything. The Romani, and they're a big problem in Europe,
gypsies.
And a lot of the European authorities really get down on them because they steal. They do all kinds of stuff. We have them in the United States. They go around in caravans living in these motorhomes. And they come into a community and then they do roofing, which as soon as they leave, it starts to leak.
Right. Yep.
I mean, yeah, well, yeah, they've got that bloodline. It's a Jewish link. Not by chance, but it is also certain that a good amount of Hebrew blood flows through the veins of the non-Jewish Hungarians, like 100%.
That's good.
Hebrew
That's a good
blood,
comment.
Not
right.
Jewish. Not
right.
Jewish.
Well, he's making a distinction between Jewish and Hebrew. That's
right.
Good.
More than commonly thought. The complexity of this research requires an accurate, detailed fragmentation of topics arranged like the pieces of a puzzle that may be understood once they all have been properly placed together in a meaningful All order. Right.
In other words, the Jews on one side and the Hebrews on the other.
Exactly,
then you start to comprehend. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Please continue.
All right. Let me get a little sip of this lovely coffee.
Yeah. Legends of Origins is the next heading.
Mm-hmm.
Let's leave it
there
to
we
you.
Go.
You're doing good.
You're doing good, boy.
Yeah.
There are very few records of the Hungarian ancient history except two myths of the origins, so that they have to be taken as the first reference in order to understand their beginnings through their own oral traditions. These two accounts are the legend of the white stag and the legend of the Turul, T-U-R-U-L, hawk. Both of them, surprisingly for an Eurasian people of the steppes, mention characters having biblical and ancient Mesopotamian names.
That means they're not Asians.
Right. Okay. Unlike they just passed through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unlike other Asian or European myths that may have some resemblances with the most ancient legends of the Middle East, but usually with a completely different nomenclature, the Hungarian accounts keep the original names.
Hmm. Okay.
Paragraph. The legend of the white stag ascribes the origin of the Hungarians to the merging of three peoples, Huns, Magyars, and Alans.
Mm-hmm.
Since the Alans, together with the Jazig and Roxlans, are classified as Massagetas in early records.
Okay, Manasseh.
And as Sarmatians. And later ones, henceforth the term Alan, Jazig, Roxlan, and Massageta will be mentioned as Sarmatian. In order to make this essay more intelligible, avoiding synonymous or quasi-synonymous terms unless specification is required.
Okay, so Sarmatians are a blend of these four named groups, which may be tribes, may be different names for the same tribe, or, you know, slightly different sub-tribes of Hebrews.
Right.
Okay. Back to you.
Family.
Yeah, family
lineages.
Names. Yeah, clan names. Clan names.
Right.
Yeah.
They're identified with the Moshki of the Assyrian Chronicles and Meshech of the Bible. For detailed information on this topic, please see Eurasians and Sarmatians.
There's
they would probably
there.
Have.
Yeah.
Right. Those are links, I do believe. Just
yes.
A second. Eli, I need to take this sweatshirt off. I'm burning up.
All right. I'll just continue while you're doing that. This legend starts with Tana. That is undoubtedly the same as the Sumerian Etana, the city of Kish or Kush. And who is equivalent with the biblical Cush, the father of Nimrod? We talked about this the other day. You know, who was the father of Nimrod? The question was, was Nimrod fathered by an illicit union, of Semiramis, who may or may not have been a non-Hebrew woman, and then Nimrod married his mother. The Cushite Scythians also had an ancestor called Kushtana. The Sumerian Etana was the first mighty one on the earth who wanted to visit heaven and did. Okay.
Mighty one. That is a fallen divine being.
Okay. Very interesting.
And at certain times, they could pass back and forth between the dimensions.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But well, now they're trapped here.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense because the Sumerians seemed to have been a primarily white civilization. It was white leaders, very obviously white leaders, but their statuary shows a lot of different races among them, especially the bug-eyed people with receding foreheads and big noses, all right, which tells you a little bit about where the Jewish visage may have originated. Okay,
right.
So
that's that Canaanite look.
Right. So please elaborate on the people of Cush, because we have two different Cushes in Scripture. We have the Egyptian Cush, and we have let's call it, for lack of a better term, the Sumerian Cush, or usually known as the Arabian Cush. Okay.
Well, that's further south. Hebrew Cush.
Hebrew Cush.
Was very close to, if not bordering on, Mizraim, which is Egypt. They were white people.
Right.
Moshe had a marriage in name only to their queen. But because they were not Yahweh worshipers, he refused to consummate the marriage, which eventually made her very, very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And they kicked him out. They kicked him out as king and said, get out of here or we're going to kill you.
Right.
Yahweh saved him on that, but he wouldn't marry somebody that was a pagan, wouldn't participate in that. So he left, and then the rest of Moshe's story took place. But that's what he was doing, and he did not marry and consummate with an Ethiopian. She was a Hebrew Cushite. But they had apostatized in that area. They were descendants of Ham and had pagan gods. And he said, "No, I'm not gonna have this." So he wouldn't consummate the act.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was in Egypt, down in Ethiopia.
You go there, Moses. Yeah, all right, way to go. Stay strong. And then he went on and married his wonderful wives.
Right.
So, and then the Exodus and all of that. Meanwhile, a lot of the tribe of Dan was already associating with other seafaring people. And they took off, and a lot of the reed boats were doing trading and came over to America. And just went up and founded Dan's Mark. I mean, everybody didn't leave during the Exodus, only a certain group.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much more to history. It's not simple. It's not simple at all. It's very complicated, as all history is.
Yes.
And it requires great
study.
Study.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, where did you leave off so I can pick it up?
Yeah, there was more than one Cush. It really looks like Cush settled in three different areas. The what we're calling the Hebrew Cush, which is pretty much synonymous with the Arabian Cush. The Ethiopian Cush, which was south of Egypt. And it looks like we're talking here about the Sumerian Cush, which, Nimrod. So that would be, again, in the Fertile Crescent.
Right.
That would be Fertile Crescent. Okay. I left off with the legend of the white stag. That paragraph.
First mighty one on earth who went to visit heaven and did.
Right. Okay. Back to you.
Right. This story coincides with the biblical account concerning Nimrod. Though as it is feasible that Nimrod set up the construction of the Tower of Babel on behalf of his father, being coherent with the Babylonian myth in which the founder of Babylon was Bel.
Hmm.
Okay, that was a pagan god.
Right.
Bel and the dragon in the Apocrypha.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The father of Ninus, Nimrod, that was the first king. In the Hungarian account, the son of Tana is Menrot, or Nemere, which is Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
who had twin sons called Magor and Hunor.
Gog.
Also, Nimrod's wife, Anuta Bau, has similar names in the Hungarian version. Eneth Bulldog Athzoni. The Assyrian accounts refer that Nimrod had twin sons, one of whose name was Magor.
Right.
Confirming the Hungarian myth.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The legend says that Hunor and Magor were pursuing a female stag that led them into a foreign land, and there she vanished without leaving any trace. The disappointed hunters, however, met their two sisters, princesses of the Sarmatians, kidnapped and married them, becoming the forefathers of the Huns and Magyars.
There you go.
The stag is also relevant in Scythian mythology. The role of Scythians will be considered afterwards.
Well, as we've been saying, the Scythians and the Japhethites, merged together. Okay, so I guess Sarmatian is a term that covers the entire group of people living with each other, probably in separate tribes, but peacefully and inhabiting the steppes. The steppes of...
Sarmatia is a general large portion of land rather than a distinct organized country.
Very good.
Okay. It's an area rather than a nation.
Yes.
It is significant that in the Hungarian legend, the sons of Nimrod and Meri were hunters, and Nimrod in the Bible is described as a mighty hunter, except he hunted men.
Right.
That's in Genesis 10, verse 9. His Sumerian name, or better, his title, was Nimurgshag, meaning Lord of the Panthers, which in Hungarian is translated Parduk Urasag, conveying the same meaning of the Hebrew name quoted in the Bible related with the word Nimrah, that means panther, leopard. All right. There was a guy in prison named, he was a Jew, named David Namer.
Hmm.
David
Namer.
David Leopard.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Nimrod. No, I'm serious.
David Nimrod.
No.
Close.
Nimrod.
Right.
Namer. Okay.
Right.
Namer. Okay, that means leopard in the Hebrew. Combined with the verb rod, that is to subdue.
Wow.
Therefore, the first part of the Sumerian name resembles the Hebrew one, but the second component is definitely quite similar to Hungarian. It is relevant that Nimrod had to subdue panthers in order to become a mighty hunter. This title is often misinterpreted as him being a leopard hunter because it was the most dangerous animal in those times. But the actual meaning is another. In fact, the lord or subduer of the panther implies that he was able to tame these animals in order to use them as a valuable aid in hunting other wild beasts.
Wow, I've never heard that before.
And man.
And man,
he was a killer.
Ooh. Training panthers to track down men.
Indeed. Also, the kings and notables of Central Asia, from where the Hungarians departed towards Europe, trained the panthers to employ them in hunting. Panther skin has traditionally been the most precious garment among Hungarian kings and leaders, recalling the very fashion in which Nimrod himself was portrayed. The historian Yosef Ben-Gurion HaKohen, also known as Yosipon, thought that Nimrod was to be identified with the first Egyptian king Menes, later merged with the Mesopotamian Nimrod and his wife Ineth with the Egyptian female deity Neith.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, this is so mixed up. Have you ever heard any of this before? Anybody out there?
This is all new stuff. Well, because we've never studied Hungarian history before, right?
We are breaking new ground here.
Well, Captain Witness says Scythian bows were the most powerful ever. A Scythian prince is recorded as firing an arrow 660 yards. About the same as an M16 rifle. Wow. Wow. That's a powerful bow.
We have run out of time.
Yeah, we're so close to the end. And, this is amazing stuff, folks. We're just going to have to cut. This may be like a three-part series. There's so much here. And we haven't even really begun to scratch the surface of the connection between Sanskrit and Hebrew and the Indo-Aryan languages, okay? Because all of the Indo-Aryan languages are derived from Hebrew, including Phoenician. This is the big secret that the academics don't want us to exploit and explain, okay? They want to pretend that Hebrew is the language of the hook-nosed kikes, and that Indo-Aryan is the language of the Aryans. But no, the Jews, the Hebrews, were not hook-nosed kikes. Okay? That's a Jewish lie that they're Hebrews, Israelites, Shemites, etc. And once you understand that that's a lie, then you can explore the similarities in appearance, race, culture, language of all of the Indo-Aryans with the Hebrews. Okay?
Boy. We are tying all these threads together. This is so exciting.
Wonderful. Yes.
Wow.
Hunor and Magor, Huns and Magyars. Okay, well, these are Japhetic names. However, Nimrod was a Hamite.
Yeah, okay? Sure was.
So we're talking about the Hamites and the Japhethites coming together. This is new to me. I've never heard about the Hamites and the Japhethites mixing together. Now, we've done plenty of studies on Japheth and Shem, but very little about Ham and Japheth. So this is really interesting stuff, okay? Wow. Wow. So it gets more interesting all the time. You know, this type of material was never available to us in the past, okay? So
here we are.
Yeah, it's great that these local historians, these local ethnic historians, are tracing their own history. And, of course, the Hungarians, because they didn't have a written language for probably a couple of millennia, right?
Right.
Probably a couple of millennia. We know so little about them. But here we're being told essentially that the Hungarians are a mix of Japheth and Ham. Their ancestors were probably present at the Tower of Babel, folks.
Yep.
And that the confusion of languages resulted in the Hungarian language. How's them apples? All right, folks. Wow, this is getting more interesting all the time. Folks, thanks for listening. You've been listening to Yahweh's Covenant People on EurofolkRadio.com. See you all next time.
See you next week. Yahweh bless.